All right, good evening,
Oh,
everybody. We
hey,
continue with our exploring different Mishnayot, different Mishnahs in Pirkei Avos, Ethics of the Fathers. And tonight is no different. I'm going to share with you, hopefully here we can do this. And there you go. Look at that. Amazing. This is from chapter 3, Mishnah number 1. This way it's easy to remember. Chapter 3, Mishnah 1. Akavya ben Mahalalel Omer. Kavya, the son of Mahalalel, would say, "Histakel b'shlosha dvarim," that literally means histakel is to look, to gaze, to analyze, reflect. Right? It's more than just a quick glance. If you contemplate the following three things, ein ata ba lidei aveira, you will not come to the hands of sin. Let's pause before you read the rest of it. Just let me give you an intro of what it is that we're going to be discussing tonight. I'm going to write a new book. It's called How to Avoid Sinning in Three Easy Steps. That's it. That's the name of this book tonight. That's the Mishnah. How to Avoid Sinning in Three Easy Steps. And of course, the key word is
avoid
nope.
sinning.
Nope.
It's not
Easy.
much left.
Easy. Yes, there is no such thing as easy. Yes, we are going to see that this is taking on a very, very, very profound understanding. But that is the basic idea. So the Mishnah starts a fellow by the name of Akavya. He's not quoted very often. There's only a handful of statements of his throughout the entire Mishnah or Talmud. So obviously, it's what he says is very, very important to us. He says the following: if you look with focus, you stare, take a hard look at these three things, you will avoid doing sin. What are they? Number one, know from where you came. Number two, where you are going. And number three, and before whom you are destined to give a judgment and accounting. And in case you can't figure that out on your own, continues the Mishnah. From where do you come? You come from a putrid drop. You come from a little bit of a donation from a male and a donation from a female, and magically it fertilizes the egg, and that's our beginnings. Very, very humble beginnings. Where are we going? Well, we know after 120 years we're going to a place of dust, maggots, and worms. And before whom? You are destined to give judgment and accounting, not before some circuit, some circuit court judge, before the Supreme King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. I'm curious. Give me your knee-jerk reaction when you hear this. You're inspired, you're terrified, you're whatever, just another day at the Tuchman office. What are your thoughts?
It's humbling.
It's humbling, okay. What else?
Makes you think that you're going to be judged, therefore, what you do is important.
Good, excellent. I'm curious. Let me change the question a little bit. Let me change the question. Read the paragraph once or twice, okay? And ask me a few questions. Some things that bother you about the way it's phrased. Words that are used, words that are not used. I'm curious, what strikes you about this Mishnah? There's a lot to discuss here, folks.
What's a putrid drop?
A smelly piece of semen and a fertilized egg. That's our beginnings. We
Yeah.
are a tipa srucha, a foul-smelling drop. That's all it is. So, okay, I'll give you a chance to think about it, but I'm going to throw a few things out at you. Let's start with number one. If I were an English teacher, or if we did this in Hebrew and I were a Hebrew grammar teacher, I would have tremendous problems with the structure of this Mishnah. Kavya ben Mahalalel says, I want you to reflect and think about three things, and it's guaranteed you won't come into the hands of sin. Know from where you came? How about giving me the answer right there? It should say, know from where you came from a putrid drop. Where are you going? Now it should continue to a place of dust, maggot, and worms. And before whom do you have to give a judgment and accounting? Before the King of Kings, God of Israel. There seems to be repetition, right? As a teacher of mine who wanted to always bring out this point, when you analyze text, he would say it clearly came forth from the Department of Redundancy Department. Did anybody get that? Okay, never mind. Okay. You're all focused on the words. Good, excellent. You can ignore all my jokes. Sandy, you understand my question, right? There's repetition here. It's completely, just get to the point. Tell me, you want, what are the three things I need to keep in mind? From where do I come? What's the answer? I come from a putrid drop. Where am I going? I'm going to a place ultimately in the ground. And in front of whom? In front of God. It seems to be, first he tells you the three, and then he goes back and explains what the three are. That's not normal. Just give me the answers. Question number one. Question number two, really? That if I think about these three things, I'll never come to do a sin. Okay? Raise your hand if you know you're mortal. Okay? We all know that our end is going to be that we're going to have to stand in judgment before whom? Not the judge, right? God. We know all this. And we also know that we come from very humble beginnings. We all took biology 101. Okay, now comes the hard part. Has it ever stopped you from sinning? Thinking about those three things? I'll be honest, doesn't work on a regular basis for me. Comes a caveat and he says, I got it. This is it. How to avoid sinning in three easy steps. Know from where you come. You come from a garnish. You come from nothing. Where are you going? You're going to end up nothing. And in front of whom you're going to have to explain every decision you made in your life? Yeah, before God. Now you're never going to sin? We've all done this. So we have a lot of, as Ricky Ricardo would say, Lucy, you have some splaining to do. Right? We got some figuring out how to understand this Mishnah. So I'm going to have a few approaches with you. And feel free to offer what you think. Can I take down this or you want to keep looking at it?
Take it down.
Anybody? Okay. That was quick. Take it down. Pause sharing. Stop sharing. Okay. I'm back. Okay. So I'm going to take a few approaches with you to really appreciate this. And we'll go back to the text to get a closer look at it. First of all, I want to focus, before answering the question, I want to focus on the terminology that was there. It says that if you analyze these three things, what would you have said? If you analyze and you think about and reflect on these three things, you, tell me in plain, simple English, you?
More knowledgeable.
You, okay. How about in relation to sin?
Will not.
You will not sin. Very simple. Do you remember the terminology? What does he say? Did I show it to you again? It's important. Hold on. I'll show it to you again. Read it out loud here. Akavi, the son of Mahalo, would say, reflect upon these three things and
you will not,
not come to the hands of transgression. That's a nice poetic way of saying you won't sin, right? You will not come to the hands of transgression. You say, okay, Rabbi, that's just the English. Show me the Hebrew. Okay, fine. I'll show you the Hebrew. Right here. Ve'ein, right here. This word is ve'ein. And you will not, ve'ein, and not, ata, you, ba, come, li'yidei, like yad, li'yidei, to the hands of avera, sin. It's a literal translation. This one is, I'm good with this one. You will not come into the hands of sin. What does that mean? You won't come into the hands of sin? Is your right hand sin or is your left hand sin? Oh, they both are. No, they're not.
You won't be placing yourself in a position where you're going to be sinning.
And what would have been lost had it just said, reflect on these three things and you won't sin? And by definition, you're not going to come to sin. It seems like a very verbose way of trying to just get to the point that you won't sin. And the terminology won't fall into the hands of, how about you won't fall into the trap? I mean, you can come up with other, comparisons. There's something that the Mishnah is trying to impress upon us about the hands of sin.
I mean, you're someone else affecting you to do so, or you can come into the hands of, kind of means that something outside of you is.
It's called the hands of sin. Sin. Yeah. It's implying, if I'm understanding Fred correctly, it's implying that sin has hands. If you think about that, at the first glance, that sounds funny. Sin has hands. No, they don't. Sin is not a thing. But if you really give it a little bit more thought, it's brilliant. Because what if I tell you something has hands, what does that imply? It implies that it has the ability to grip.
Grab you, hold, get you, trap
you, get you in its hands, in its clutches. We are, or we have to be on guard. Sin is not passive. Transgressions are not passive. They are active. They are looking for customers. They are out to get you. That's the allure. That's the attraction. Why are bells and whistles on things so attractive? Because they get our attention. Why do you think they put it on there? You know, I was going to buy a car, a used car. And so my father, Zichron Levracha, gave me good advice. He said, do me a favor. Don't even look at the color. I said, okay, I'm not big on the color. He says, good. Don't even look as to whether it has dents. Don't even look if it has the power this and the power that. I said, well, that's important. He says, not yet. The first thing you got to do is look under the hood. That's the car. That's the main thing of the car. Everything else is bells and whistles. You don't buy the car for the bells and whistles, he told me. First, make sure it's a good car, that it's a safe car. Okay. Then you want this, you want that. Okay, fair enough. But if there's an attraction, they make it look so good, and you ignore what's the most important part. Sin is an attractive thing. It tries to get a hold of you. That's the first thing. Sin has hands. It's looking for customers, number one. So Akavya says, if you reflect on these three things, you will avoid the attraction of sin. Not promising that you won't ever sin, but you'll avoid the attraction of it and you'll think twice before doing it. If you knew that there was a worm in the apple, you saw there was a hole on the outside of the apple, are you going to think twice of just taking a random bite? Sure you will, because you had a warning. The beautiful, shiny other side of the apple, as alluring as it may be, but you got a chance to look under the hood a little bit, and you see there's more to this than it looks, and you want to investigate, not so fast. Maybe if this is my only apple, what I'll do is I'll cut it open and see. Is it decayed all the way through? Is it only one tiny piece that the worm got into the top of the skin and then it left and it didn't ruin the rest? Okay. But at least you have to think about it and not just jump in. I had a Rebbe once. I was very fortunate. My first year in Israel, when I was studying after high school, I went for a gap year to study in yeshiva there. And I got, I had the chutzpah to go up to my Rebbe at the time. And I said to him, I'd like to learn one-on-one with you during what we called Musar Seder, during the, there was about a 30 minute time period before we broke for dinner that we would study Mussar. We would study character development. And everybody had their own, what they were learning. So I had the chutzpah and I said, I'd like to learn Mussar with you. So he took me up on it and he says, okay, we'll learn such and such a book. Fine. And it was fascinating. The book was fascinating, but even more was my Rebbe. Very, very wild character. So we're sitting down and he says to me, we're studying a piece. And he says to me, okay, Tzvi, what's the difference between doing a sin and a hot bath? I said, what? He says, yeah. What's the difference between doing a sin and a hot bath? I said, I have no idea. I think I shared this with you. He said to me, yeah, I'll tell you the difference. A hot bath, first you put your foot in, you go, ooh. Then you go, ah. When you do a sin, first you go, ah, and then you go, ooh. But he's right. He's so right. Because when we do it, we're so involved and we think this is the only thing. And then afterwards, we start reflecting on it. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Or I know I shouldn't have done that. But why did we do it? Because it wasn't an intellectual thing. We were conditioned. We were enticed to do it. It looked so inviting. It was so easy. That is what it means that sin has hands. It's out there to try to get a hold of you, get a grip on you, and to get you to sin. So comes along a Kavi and he says, what can you do to ward this off? What can you do to avoid coming into the grip of sin? Well, he says, you have to think. First and foremost, don't jump in. Think. If you take a moment and ask yourself, if you did this in business, if you were an irrational jump at the first opportunity, you'd be probably a poor business person. You have to think. Does this fit with my business plan? Is this something as a short term or a long term? There's a million things you have to think about. Then why is our life, and certainly our spiritual life, any less than a business plan? You give it some thought. You don't just willy-nilly invest $1 million. You have to think about it. Is this smart? I got to take out a loan. How am I going to pay it back to the bank? At what percentage? Am I going to generate enough revenue? You got to figure this all out. So why is it any different? I'm passing by a fast food place. Yeah, I'm hungry. But what's the cost? Yeah, in the store, it's probably only $2.99. You get yourself a big burger with who knows what, right? But is it worth it? Good question. Think about it. Can I push myself off? Or if I know I'm going to travel, what can I take along with me so that I'm not tempted? You know, you remember the commercial for Snickers? You're not yourself. You guys know what I'm talking about? It was brilliant. It's such a smart, it was a smart. Look it up afterwards, Fred, not now. Don't, I can see you're clicking. Don't go chat. Stay focused there. Okay? You can look it up afterwards. But it's besides it was a good PR move, it was a brilliant, smart. It was so smart because it's true. Because when you're hungry, you can't think straight. You're going to be somebody else. You're cranky and you're this and that. And they're right. So you got it. What can you do? We all get hungry. Plan accordingly. Think about it. Akavia says, if you want to avoid being gripped by sin, think. Step number one, reflect, analyze, think about what it is your next move is going to be. Step number one is me'ayin bata. From where do we come? Where do we come? We have no business being arrogant. Oh, look at what. Yeah, let me remind you all. We all come from garnished. We come from nothing. We come from very little. If you think about it, and we try not to, but it's not such a bad idea. We are brought into this world by an act that can either be holy or immoral. It depends on the people. It depends on what their motivation is. It depends on what their aspirations are. Were they living together as husband and wife because they wanted to raise a family with values? Or was it one night stand and it didn't work? You know, the protection didn't work. How did you get into this world? Well, there's only one way, and it's through a physical act. That's how it works. It could go one of two ways. Depends on the aspirations and the quality of the people involved. Step number one, Akavia is telling us, this is a lesson for life. Everything in life could either be of a purpose, of an accomplishment, or it could be selfishness and evil. The choice is yours. Why am I doing the next thing? The same way I was brought into this world, my beginnings were from people that made a decision. I'm assuming, you know, all good things there, right? Made good choices to bring us into this world. We were not an accident. We were not an oops. These were decisions. Step number one, when I make decisions in my life, I should keep that in mind. My origin is from decision making. I need to continue that for the rest of my life. Number two, continuing that theme, where are we going? You know, most of us, certainly when we're younger, we try avoiding this topic as much as possible. We don't like to talk about our demise. We don't like to talk about death. We don't like to talk about what happens afterwards. But at some point in our maturity, at some point in our growing up, we start to realize that that is an inevitable truth. It is a reality. It's not something we look forward to, but perhaps we come to terms with it a little bit, a realization of our ultimate end. But what that realization does, it again gives us a choice on how to live our life. You see, if you think you'll live forever, where you don't think about that the ultimate end, then you do whatever you want. And okay, so I wasted 10 years. So I tried this and I tried that and I went and I did this and I partied like that, because it doesn't matter. What's 10 years? So what? But when it starts hitting you that the clock starts ticking, the day we're born, then you start saying, but I want to accomplish things in my life. I want to make my life purposeful, that it have meaning. So you can take two approaches. Some people look at the stark reality of their ultimate demise and they say, fine, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. And they just let's see, how much fun can I have? There's a bumper sticker, I remember it as a kid, and it said, the one who amasses the most toys wins, right? That's ridiculous. But that is some people's philosophy. But that's not the way we should be looking at it. The other choice is that I want to invest. I want to invest something of my life in a long-lasting legacy, whether it be family, goodness in my community, making a difference, being a productive member of society. That's something that's much, much, much more meaningful. But the choice is yours. So just as step number one, which was where do you come from, is a reminder that choice was made, you should be making good choices. Step number two is exactly the same thing. What's your end? You know that you're going to have an ultimate end, then the choices you make matter. It's important that I do something worthwhile, because otherwise I just frittered away a life. And part number three is that who do I have to give an accounting for? All of my actions, all the choices I make, not some dude, not some person who I happen to randomly run into it. I don't have to explain it to you. Oh, but when you come before the King of all kings, the creator of the universe, yeah, excuses don't fly. So that means all your choices matter. God wants to know, why did you choose this? Why didn't you choose that? And what are you going to say? Says Akavia, these three things, keep in mind, if you reflect on that every single day of your life, you know what? You wake up in the morning and you say, I want to make good decisions today that is going to move me forward towards productive life in this world, both in a physical way and in a spiritual way. Three easy steps. Will you be tempted by all the glitz? Will you be tempted by all the bells and whistles? Absolutely. The hands are out there. They're tentacles trying to draw you in. Kavya says, think. Think about the big picture. Is it worth it? I've mentioned Rabbi Beryl Wine many times. I had him in high school. He was my principal, the dean. I didn't take advantage of him as much as I should have. That didn't come out right. I didn't take advantage of listening to him as much as I should have. I unfortunately did take advantage of him more than I should have. But that's another story. In his commentary on Pirkei Avot, he tells the following story. Such a great story. He says, I was once invited to a meeting with a major company here in Jerusalem. The head of the company called me and said he was sending a taxi to pick me up. When I entered the taxi, the driver asked me, where are we going? I told him, I don't know. Quite upset, the driver shouted, how can you get into a cab and not know where you're going? I explained that the company sent the cab and that I didn't know the address. I told the driver to wait. I went back upstairs to my apartment and called the company. I went back to the cab, gave the driver the address. The company is located in a brand new area of Jerusalem, and its street did not appear on the driver's GPS. He was fit to be tied, ranting at me as he contacted his dispatcher to get instructions. He missed the street a few times. Again, there were no street signs posted. It's still a new neighborhood. He was muttering at me all the way that it was somehow my fault. At last, we finally arrived. Since the company had sent the cab for me, I left home without taking money to pay for the fare. Well, that put the taxi driver over the top. How dare you get into my cab without money, he roared at me. I finally got the company man down to pay the cab bill and escaped from the cab and its driver, who was still loudly complaining that I somehow ruined his whole afternoon. Rabbi Wine writes the following. I thought about this ordinary incident and realized that it was a miniature drama of Akavia's words. Where are you going? Asked the cab driver. I didn't know. Neither did I have the ability to pay the bill at the end of the trip when the account was due. The example of the cab trip was more humorous than truly serious. But as far as Akavia's words are concerned, the situation is truly serious and the lesson should be taken to heart and mind. Brilliant. Great story. That's point number one. Okay? One general lesson that this is all about making good choices because everything matters. From the time we're born to the time we pass away, everything matters. Okay, point number one. But here's a second, and that is addressing the concern of the repetition of the terms. Again, just to refresh our memory, right? I'm repeating myself. Where first Akavia tells you, what are the three things? And then he goes back and says, and what's the answer to those three things? He repeats it and gives you the answers. Why not just say it all at once? So to appreciate this thought, you have to know that in the days when there were many yeshivos in Europe, there were basically two schools of thought on how a person should address their character development. There's two ways that we can look at ourselves. They would say, one is to recognize the lowliness of man. When you look at the greatness of God and you compare yourself to God, you're like, okay, you know, what am I so proud about? What am I so arrogant about in the big scheme of things? There's been billions and billions of people and I'm just one of them. And, you know, how great am I anyway? The greatness of God. And that puts a person in a very humble with a, you know, a real sense of humility. However, there's another school of thought, and that is the greatness of man. What's the greatness? And that there's no creature in the universe other than mankind that is blessed with a godly soul. There's a little bit of godliness in every one of us. Well, I'm not just Jack Rabbit. I'm not just some leopard out there or even a grizzly bear. Do you know who I am? I'm God's child. God is in me better, you know, like no other creature. Both are true. Both aspects of true, the lowliness of man and the greatness of man. The question is, which is a better motivator to keep a person in check? Which is a better motivation? There were two schools of thought. And in some yeshivos, in Kelm, in one in particular, they would learn the 6 days of the work of the week, not Shabbos, but Sunday through Friday, they would focus on the lowliness of man so that there's a sense of humility. But on Shabbos, the focus was how awesome man is, the great potential that lies within each person. Why? Because godliness resides within. Both are correct. But now I'm going to ask you, which one will motivate you from not doing a sin? Your lowliness or your greatness? Your greatness or your lowliness? Which one's going to work? Which one works for you? If I tell you, I'll give you a chance to think. I'm not giving you enough time to think. I'm not following my own 4 second rule. Candy, what do you think?
I don't know.
I think your greatness keeps
not
you.
Not your greatness.
What if I told you the following? Do you know who you are? You are the princess of the king. You are the prince. Does it befit you to be rummaging through the garbage? In Yiddish, they use an expression, pasnisht. It's below my dignity. It's not befitting for somebody of my caliber to do something like that. Is there anything intrinsically wrong? No, but that's for the low class. The people who don't have a job. Okay, you wouldn't expect. You'll never see the king or queen come out in anything but royal garments. You'll never catch them in their robe. You know, on the way to the bathroom. You'll never catch them that way. Why? What, they're trying to hide? No, because there's a certain royalty. There's a certain regalness. That's them. You're not going to see them in their, you know, in their gotkis. It's not going to happen. Why? Because they represent royalty. So I'm asking you, if you're the prince or the princess, you're going to go ahead and do something that's unbefitting? Something like that? You're going to go ahead and you're going to speak gossip? You're going to become the tabloid for the royal kingdom? That's good. That's not going to fly. The queen's going to call you right into her office, big time. You can't behave like this, Prince William, Prince Harry, just saying, right? There's certain behaviors that are unbecoming. Why? Because you come from great royalty. That can keep a person in check. It's not an arrogant thing. You have to face the reality. The reality is you come from a soul that is given to you from God. Do you know how great you are? You're awesome. No other creature in the universe has this. You know why you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara? Because you're royalty. Pasnished. It's not appropriate. But sometimes we don't focus enough on that. And we say, yeah, if they only knew, they would probably throw me out of the royal family. I've done so many things. Please, please, please. Tabloids are only part wrong, part right. Some of the stuff they make up in the National Enquirer, it's based on the truth. You know, they would throw me out. Who am I? But there's truth to that as well. What right do I have to go ahead and go against what God asked me to do? I'm a garnish. I'm a nothing. How dare I? Some peasant is going to go ahead and disregard the king's order? That does not bode well for the peasant, does it?
Mm-hmm.
So both are valid motivations. The lowliness of man keeps us in check with our humility. How dare I? I would never have the chutzpah to go against what the edict of the king is. How would I do such a thing like that? And the other side is, I have a certain regalness and a certain loyal. Wow, you know, I can do things like this. I can go, but wait a second. I have a reputation here. I got a God soul in me. I can't do something like that. They are both valid. Now let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah starts, Akavya ben Mahalalel says, reflect on three things and you won't come into the hands of sin. What are they? Number one, where do you come from? What's the answer? I'm asking you folks, what's the answer to that question? Where do you come from?
Come from God.
Thank you. You come from God. You have a godly soul. You're awesome. You're amazing. It's not appropriate. It's not befitting somebody of your stature to go ahead and to do a sin like that. No. And you know where you're going? Where are you going when it's all over?
Back to the dust.
Back to God. No, I hope you share, Sharon. You're going back to God, aren't you? Your soul gets returned back to God. You're awesome. You're amazing. And in front of whom are you going to give an accounting? Not some judge in, you know, Baltimore City Circuit Court. That's not who you're going to give an accounting to. You're going to give who? Your loving Father in heaven, to God. Wow. That's how fortunate I am. I'm not going to want to sin. I come from greatness. I'm going back to greatness and I get to interact with the ultimate greatness. I'm not going to go ahead and sin. Continues the Mishnah. Akavya says, if that doesn't work, then I'm going to turn it on you. And I'm going to remind you of your lowliness. You know where you come from? You come from a putrid drop. You know where you're going? You're going back into the ground. And you know in front of whom? Not some Circuit City judge. You're going before God. You better not sin. He repeats it because he's addressing it from two angles. Angle number one, without stating it outright, he begs the question, do you know the greatness that is lies within you? You're a prince and you're a princess. The neshama that is within you. Wow. And you're going back to God? Wow. And you get to, wow. You're not going to want to sin because you come from such greatness. You are greatness. But if that's not enough of a motivation, he reminds us, don't let it go to your head because there's a sense of humility that's needed as well. Know your beginning, very humble beginnings. Know your ultimate demise back into the ground and in front of whom you're going to have to give answers to. Not some judge, but the ultimate judge. Both aspects. And perhaps that's how some commentaries suggest why Akavya has it in two parts. First part, reflecting on the greatness of man. And the second, on the humility that's needed because of his lowliness. What time is it? Can't be. Okay. Let's keep going here. I'm going to pull up the Mishnah again. I want to focus on another word. Okay, we said, know from where you come. And here we go. Where you are going. How would you have phrased it? As the contrast to know from where you came, what would you say? Would you say it in
where
the,
you will? Where you will be going? I don't know.
Or where you will end up. The words okay. Where you are going are present tense.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Hebrew, just to show you again, holech. La'an ata holech. Where are you going? In present tense. Not where will you end up. That would have been the appropriate contrast to where you came from is where you end up. No. Says, again, the precision of the words. What, Susan?
Holeth, where in the present tense you're going.
Yeah. Well, so that doesn't seem to jive with what he's trying to tell us. Isn't it where you'll end up?
No.
What do you mean?
Because we make these decisions every day, which is in the present.
Correct.
And
correct.
So we need to be addressing it every day in the present.
That is correct. The ultimate end is not determined at the end. It's every small decision that was made along the way, every day. People think greatness. People think that greatness is determined by those few big moments in life. It is not true. They play a role. But the real character of a person is the small little things that are done every day. Yeah. That becomes you. Yes, there are people that earn that incredible end result in a blink of an eye at the last moment. The people who give up their lives and sacrifice, I'm not taking anything away. Giving up one of the greatest mitzvahs possible, Mesirat Nefesh, right? Sacrifice, dying al Kiddush Hashem, dying to sanctify God's name. However, you know what's even bigger? Is living al Kiddush Hashem. Living, sanctifying God's name every day. It's those little things. When you have that little urge, not big, it's not, you know, the big take out the ad in the local paper. It's a small little thing that I'm not going to share with somebody because it's a secret someone shared with me. Small. It's not going to change the person's life. It's not going to be, who's going to know? No. Little things every single day. You know, we're right now in the middle of counting the Omer, and the famous reason why many of us have the custom in terms of mourning, right? Of I'm not shaving or getting haircuts. There's no weddings typically during this time period. Why? Because we're mourning the loss of 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva. Everybody knows, or I shouldn't say everybody, many people know the beginning of Rabbi Akiva's story. Rabbi Akiva was an ignorant shepherd. Ignorant when I don't mean in terms of his intelligence, I mean ignorance in terms of Judaism. Didn't know an aleph from a bet. So how did he get going? What inspired him? Anybody know this story?
Yes. Was it the drop of water?
Correct. He, on one of his journeys as a shepherd, he took the sheep to a well, to an area where there was water, and he was... And he noticed something interesting. He noticed that one of the stones near the well had a hole in it, had a hole. He was curious. How do you get a hole in a stone? Every other stone around there was whole and complete. So how did this? And he stood there for a few moments, and he noticed every few moments, another drop of water, I guess, was dripping from somewhere, and it kept landing on that spot. And he thought about it, and he said, wow, something that is so flimsy, like a drop of water, can have such an impact on a rock solid piece of stone, can wear it away and to impact it. Then I keep hearing about this thing called the Torah, God's word, which is like fire, certainly can penetrate even my heart. And he said, I'm going to give it a shot. And there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from that story. Two very quick. Number one, was he the first shepherd to use that well? Highly unlikely. Was he the first person to notice that? Probably not. Then what made Rabbi Akiva different?
He acted on it.
He reflected on it first. Then he acted on it. But the first step is that he thought about it. How often in life we see things, we may make a quick mental note. Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah, how about the O's? You know, and then you're on to the next topic, and then, okay, interesting. But it's so much more. The story of Rabbi Akiva is he took a moment to reflect on what it is he was seeing and saying, I got to learn something from this. That's Akavia's first word, histakel. Look, analyze, reflect on these three things. It's not a superficial, quick, oh yeah, great. Good class, Rabbi. Moving on. It needs reflection. I tried using this word with a teen group the other day. I said to let it percolate. Oh my gosh. They looked at me like, what are you talking about? I was like, yeah. It was so painful for me. Like, it's the perfect word. Percolate. That's what this has to be. It's not a quick glance, a quick, oh yeah, okay, good point. Reflect. That's what Rabbi Akiva did. He saw that the fact that the water, he'd be like, oh, okay. Do you know how the steam locomotive was invented? How steam engine was invented? It's a great story. The story goes, supposedly, that a guy came home and he was making dinner for his wife. So right away, you already questioned the story. But let's okay? He goes ahead and he's making dinner for his wife, and he puts the pot up to boil, and he walks away and he's taking care of the next thing and cutting up the vegetables and blah, blah, blah. And he notices that the pot cover every now and then started to pop up. And he's like, interesting. Why is it doing that? So he analyzed it and he investigated and he figured out that steam could be harnessed as a power. And then, okay, fine. Was he the first person to make dinner for his wife? Maybe, maybe. But was he the first person that saw this? No, it can't be. But the difference between him and everybody else is that he reflected. He thought about it. That is what Akavi is telling us. You have to reflect on these three things. You can't just make a note card and say, okay, very nice. It has to be, this is, you know, take it to heart and really think about it. Why am I telling you this? Oh, because that's the whole concept of how that one drop, it wasn't one big tidal wave that came along and washed away the stuff. No, it was a day in and day out, day in and day out. Drip, 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 drip. That's what made the difference. That's what actually carved into the stone. That's why Akavya uses the word that you have to ask yourself, La'an ata holech, where are you currently going? Not where's your end? Don't know what the end's going to be. My end's going to be what decisions I make every day. The small little ones. One more point. The terminology that's used, and again, I'm going to pull it up because I want you to see it. Okay, at the very end, the third piece, before whom you are destined to give a judgment and accounting. I always say, when you read the Torah, or you read a Mishnah, or you read a piece of Talmud, this is not Charles Dickens. They did not get paid by the word. The wording is precise. What is the difference between judgment and accounting? And you say, oh, that's just colloquial. No. In Hebrew, din v'cheshbon. Din is a judgment. A cheshbon is an accounting. What's the difference between a judgment and an accounting?
When I think about cheshbon, I think about cheshbon ha-nefesh, an accounting that one person does. It reflects on themselves and what they have done. It's an
as
internal.
As opposed to, how's that different than the judgment?
A judgment to me is sort of more after a pronouncement or something that's coming external out from. It can come from within, for sure, but I'm seeing this as two pieces. The piece that is
I'm with you, but let's read it into the words. Know from where you came, where you're going, and before whom you are destined to give. Judgment and accounting. Not the judgment on you. You have to give a judgment and an accounting for all you've done. What is the difference? Accounting is the more, you know, probably the easier word, but there has to be a difference.
Well, let's see. The accounting could be what you did. The judgment would be maybe why you did it or the consideration of doing it. I realize it's two different things. Usually, a judgment comes from being from an accountment, but in this case, it's give, not receive.
Correct.
So it's and if you're doing it, then it's
not, you're right. And I'm not asking you an easy question. You guys are way past the point of easy questions. This is the advantage. Sorry. No more Mr. Nice Guy. There are a lot of answers to this. First, I want you to recognize the question. Again, my goal is to get you to read the text, analyze. No more, you know, third grade Hebrew school stories. Read the text. Okay.
Rabbi,
I'll you very quickly. What, Gary?
You give an accounting, somebody else gives a judgment.
Okay, so you're onto an interesting idea, but it says you give the judgment, but you're onto something. And let's see if I can elaborate. When I do, not I, not me, not you, when somebody does a sin, okay, those, we'll call it 5 minutes that they're involved in the sin, there are really two sins going on at that time. There's two things. Number one, the transgression, the sin itself. But you know what else is also happening? What those 5 minutes could have been used for. Had you not done that sin, you could have utilized those 5 minutes to do something positive. You see, in God's world, every moment counts. So if you misuse the moment, not only do you have to give an explanation for what you did wrong, you have to now face judgment for what you didn't do that you could have done during that same time. There's a judgment for what was done. I said it backwards. This is the right way to say it. There's a judgment on what it is you did wrong and an accounting of what you could have done and accomplished during that time. That's how one commentary understands it. There's another one. How about being judged on the action I did and the accounting from the people who saw me and learned from me? Who's accountable for that? If I was a poor role model, somebody learned from my action and said, oh, I guess it's okay. Do you know that there's a law, something called Marit Ayin, Maris Ayin, as I would say it in yeshiva. It means when people look. For example, classic example, right? Me dressed as the rabbi with my yarmulke on my head and my beard. I whether I like it or not, I'm identifiable as a Torah observant Jew, right? What happens if I walk in to a non-kosher restaurant? Now, you all will, of course, give me the benefit of the doubt. Right? There's no way Rabbi T is going to go get himself something not kosher. He probably needs the bathroom. That's what you, because you all give me the benefit of the doubt. However, there is a law that I have to take that into consideration. I have to be concerned that maybe somebody who maybe doesn't know me will walk and say, whoa, I guess McDovid's is really kosher.
I was going to say that. I experienced that.
We've all had that experience. I think, you know, there's something called Maris. Maris from Re'ia means the looking eye of the eye. People will see and learn from it.
Yes.
You have to be careful. Why? Because your actions are being followed. They're being seen and perhaps followed. So what if I do a sin? Let's say I go ahead, not me, Dan, we're trying to stay above the fray here. Somebody does the sin and someone else learns from that behavior and says, I guess it's okay. Here's a practical example. Forget, you know, going into the non-kosher, practical.
Reminder.
How about something simple? Talking in the middle of shul during services, right? We know we shouldn't do it. There's a certain level of respect and decorum that is really the right thing to do. And in some places in the prayer, you're not allowed to speak. other than the prayer. And people see me talking. People see me talking. So what are they going to make up? What are they going to come to a possible conclusion? One of two things. The rabbi is not such a great rabbi, and he breaks his own laws. Or, more likely, because, you know, they give me some benefit of the doubt. Jobs, this job's got to have some fringe benefits, right? The alternative is that they say, I guess if the rabbi's doing it, it's okay. So when, after 120 years, this guy's going to go up to heaven and God's going to say, you know, you caused 300 people to speak in places of prayer when they're not allowed to. And you say, whoa, I never taught that. I mean, listen, I work really hard Wednesday nights to be very clear. The people should not walk away with the wrong lessons. So let me make it very clear to all of you. Don't talk during services. Am I clear? So why is God going to have... The answer is because I did it and someone learned from it. I have to give an accounting for that. Even though I didn't do it, I was the cause of it. And therefore, Akavya says, you know, in front of whom you're going to have to give A, judgment for what you did, and B, an accounting for what people learned from your behavior. That's on you too. One more. And that is the negative impact that it has on the world. This is a little bit more in the esoteric realm. We're not going to have time, but there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that talks about that for every mitzvah you do, you create a defense attorney, a defense angel up in heaven. And for every sin a person does, they create a prosecuting angel. What that means is very simple, is that is doing mitzvot and, God forbid, doing a sin creates a reality in the spiritual realm. It's not just hibby-jibby, and it's not just a concept or a theory. Something real that you can't see becomes a reality. In my mind, as I learned more about science, there's so many things, like I'll give you an example. How does the microwave keep my food up? Oh, well, there's microwaves that are bouncing and that. And like, but I can't see that. Well, the answer is because, Tachman, you're not a scientist and you haven't done the research. But if you ask a scientist who knows about microwaves, they can explain it to you because it's real. It's not a concept. It's real. But you can't see it. Well, the hot potato is very real when I put that in my mouth. It is nice and hot. It is also true in the spiritual realm. When we do a mitzvah, we create a reality. An angel of positivity is created. And God forbid, the other way around, if a person does a sin, it creates a reality of negativity in the spiritual realms. And after 120 years, when we stand before God and God says, let's pull up your rap sheet, how'd you do? Well, there's going to be hundreds of thousands and millions of defense angels that are going to come and say, I was created because she gave tzedakah. And the next one's going to say, I was created because the person prayed. And I was created because the person did chesed for someone else. And this one, and there's going to be millions of these guys. Why? Because every time you did a mitzvah, you created a reality. The scary part is that there's another group of angels when God pulls up the rap sheet. And there's, unfortunately, also a decent number, hopefully less than the other side, that are prosecuting angels. And this one says, yeah, I was created when he spoke Lashon Hara, because that was a sin. And the next one gets up and says, yeah, I was created when he or she spoke during the services they weren't supposed to. And this one gets up and says, yeah. And there's a whole slew of these guys. And it becomes WWE, the World Wrestling, right? And it's a battle royale. We're laughing, but that's really the truth. Perhaps this last understanding is that we have to give a din. We have to give a judgment on what we did. We sinned. We did the transgression. The cheshbon, the accounting, are the mitzvos, right, on that which it had as a negative impact here in this world. Because if the more, it's not just after 120 years. When you do a mitzvah, you create an energy of positivity in this world. It creates a wave of positive. And God forbid the other way around. The Talmud says that a person should always look at themselves as if they were 50-50. They were right in the middle. 50% righteous, 50% not righteous. And their very next action will determine their fate. Because you just got to win by one. Got to win by one. If we thought about that every time we were going to do something and say, hey, it's 50-50, let me get one more positive, right? We would do positive much more. Continues the Talmud, and if you think that's not motivating enough, not only are you 50-50, but imagine at that very moment, the world was 50-50. And your very next action isn't just going to determine your fate, but will determine the fate of the world. Because the world is exactly balanced at that moment, and your next action, boom. When you logged on at 8 o'clock, you made a decision, and you changed the balance of power in this world towards positivity, because you came to learn Torah for an hour. An hour and five, actually, right? That's how we look at it. And therefore, when we, unfortunately, the opposite is that we have to give not only a judgment of what we did, but the impact that it had everywhere else. That's the accounting. My goal was very simple. I told you, we're going to figure out how to write a short pamphlet, how to avoid sinning in 3 easy steps. Now that we've spent time on it, we realize it's not so simple. It's not so easy, but it is doable. It is very doable. Akavia's 3 messages to us are: give thought to your actions. They are important, every one of them. Not just for you, for now. Not just for you after 120 years, but for the world. You want to make a difference in the world? You don't have to become the next leader of the free world. And you don't have to do the most massive thing. You know what you can do? One small thing. That's it. That's what you can do. Don't get caught into the hands of sin. It's so alluring. It's so attractive. Be strong. Remind yourself where you come from. Positively, you come from God. You're given a godly soul. And negatively, you came from a putrid drop. Where are you going? Ah, Gevaldik, I'm going back to God. There's more to life than just here. I get to go back to God. And if that doesn't work, yeah, you know where you're going? Your body? Yeah, down into the ground. And where, in front of whom you give an accounting? Thank God it's God. And it's not in front of Tachman. He's not so simple. He would come down much harsher. For God. And if you're not, then you should be scared out of your wazoo. You got to give an accounting and a judgment for everything done, what could have been done, the impact on others. Yeah, you should be shaking and quaking in your boots. That should be enough to get us not to sin. So those 3 things, you got it made in the shade, ladies and gentlemen. Simple, easy peasy. That is our Mishnah. A lot to think about. Go ahead, Fred.
You actually made me think of something a lot differently now. And I was going to mention the first in another way. I think it's Beth Shalom, but there's a synagogue above the ark. It just says, remember before who you stand.
Correct.
And I suddenly, you said something a few minutes ago, and I suddenly realized, I used to think of it when you came up to the ark, it was meant for you to understand where you were at that moment. I think, at least I'm now accepting it as to me, no, not just when you're in the synagogue, those words should be in your head at all times, that whatever you do, remember those words, right? Because that seems to be, makes more sense.
Correct.
In a way.
Even and you, more so. You're right.
You just, You just said something that changed my entire thinking of
You're
that
right.
little phrase.
Yeah.
So,
Now the shame me out to Omi. Know before whom you stand.
Yeah. So, check. You're on the good side right now. You just created something for me.
There you go.
So you did it. You did a mitzvah for me.
Okay. I can retire now. Fabulous. Hopefully, I'm now one more than the other. Okay.
And by the way, my when I was a teenager, we were at a restaurant somewhere. I'm with my cousin, and she had a friend walked in, and the friend had a yarmulke on. And he sat down at the table with us, and my cousin, who's a little younger than me, we were teenagers, looked at him and said, "Take your kippah off. Someone might walk by the window here and think this is a kosher restaurant."
Yeah.
I learned that back when I was probably 16, 17 years old. Years old, so I knew where you were going.
It's true. One of my favorite stories. It's a terrible story. It really is terrible, but it's funny. And that is the story of the rabbi who he was just at his wit's end, and he decided to go play golf. All right, go play golf on Yom Kippur.
Hey.
All right, on Yom Kippur. So fine, he goes somewhere out of the city. And he finds a beautiful, area, and he goes golfing. And on the third hole, he actually gets a hole in one. He gets a hole in one. The angels up in heaven are having a cow. They're like, "God, how could you possibly do that? Really? Like, seriously? On Yom Kippur, he's doing this, and you give him a hole in one?" God leans in and says, "Who's he gonna tell?"
Yeah.
Right? It's an old one. Yeah. You're right. You always have to remember in front of whom we stand. Anyway, all right. Any questions?
Rabbi, how does Yom Kippur play into all this? You know, you can be a sinner all your life, and it says God will always take you back. And Yom Kippur, you confess your sins, and you're forgiven.
You're right. But, you're making it very simplistic. I just have to say I'm sorry and I get a whole new start. That's not how this works. That's not how this works. The process of teshuva, of real repentance, is uprooting the negative, that those behaviors, out of your system. So, yes, God is willing to forgive, but you still have a job to do to not do it again. Change your behavior.
But if you're at the end of your life?
So you do achieve some level of teshuva. That's true. But you don't get the same measure of reward if you're, and again, you're thinking of it in simplistic terms, that you just have to, as long as at the end you get one thumbs up, okay, you're forgiven. Now you get front row seats up there in heaven. It don't work that way, sweetie. You got to earn your spot.
You don't get that ticket says you're going to Hollywood, dude.
Yes, you get to go, but you're going to be walking. You ain't even going to get the chance to use the tram.
And you're forgetting about all that time in the washing machine.
Right. I didn't want to go there. That's right. That car wash and washing machine. You still got to deal with that, man.
Rabbi.
Yes, Candy.
Michelle, that's something I'll never forget.
One second, Sharon.
In the washing machine, waiting.
The washing machine, there you go.
In the waiting room, yeah.
There you go.
Waiting for the soul train.
The soul train.
You can tell the guys that have been around for a while.
Oh, my gosh. Someone asked me how long I've been doing this class. I said, I think this is my 15th year that we've been doing our class.
I got to hear that joke, because that's before I started coming, so. I never heard.
Whatever. One day we'll talk about it again. Yes.
Send me a text.
Join the soul train.
Go ahead, Candy.
Yeah. It was really interesting to me when Fred, when he talked about the above the ark, because right before that, Fred, I was having flashbacks to, I grew up going to Rogers Avenue Synagogue with Rabbi Max. And anybody from Baltimore knew Rabbi Max. And I can remember as a child all of the talking in the synagogue, and he would bang his fist. He kept banging and banging and banging. And that's one of my biggest memories as a child, is I used to look at the lions up there, and I would see him banging, banging, banging. And I kept thinking, he's like a lion. He's roaring, but nobody is listening. And then I thought about all the years, over almost 45 years, that I heard Rabbi Cosman. Never once do I even remember people talking in the services.
Yeah. I'm with you, totally with you. I'm so proud. The synagogue that I attend is known for its quiet. It's known in the community that people are there to daven. I'm not saying nobody talks. I'm not saying that. But it is overwhelmingly quiet. And all you hear is prayers. It's really an amazing thing. It's one of the things I truly, truly love about my shul. It's really special. There's such a level of decorum. And these are all fun-loving guys. They're all nuts like me. They're all, you know, great guys and gals. But during davening, it's during davening. Now's not the time to catch up with your buddies and catch up on the stocks and catch up on sports and all the other. This is the time for services. So I'm totally with you. And you're right, Fred. We should take the message of that's, you know, standing in front of the ark that says, know before whom you stand. Always. That's true. That's true. So Mishnah, this third parak, third chapter, Mishnah 1, it's a good one. It's good to remember it. All right?
Perfect. Thank you.
Really a pleasure. Have a great
week.
And I will see you, God willing, next week.
So